live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information, Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google+, and also on Periscope, at TotalTutor. And I really enjoy interviewing former NFL stars and plus college football stars. So I'm excited to welcome the program former Cleveland Brown, Florida Gator star, and Ed Block Courage Award winner, Andre Davis. Andre, thanks for calling, and how are you?
Man, I'm doing great. How you doing, Mr. Neil?
I'm doing fantastic, and I can throw a little dig at you. I don't know how much you wear the Browns colors, but that Steelers game yesterday was pretty good.
Hey man, it was rough. Even though I haven't been there in but like 7-8 years now, I still root for the Browns all the time, man. And I'm waiting on the day that they turn the program around and they be competing to make the playoffs, compete for division championship, possibly Super Bowl one day.
For Pittsburgh fans, we want that too. We want the Browns Steelers rivalry to come back.
Yeah, it would be great. Now, one thing I say, being a part of that rivalry, I think we beat y'all 2 times while I was in Cleveland for my 7 years. So 15 times, we had the game won. That playoff game, we were up 33-13 and some kind of way found a way to lose it. But, that game means so much to the city of Cleveland. Guys are always up for that game. We always find a way to lose it, though.
And I'm just kidding. I didn't know for sure. You know, I was about to just introduce you to the Denver Broncos because Broncos and Steelers are my favorite team. So I'll have to talk about the year at the Broncos. But what I always like to get involved in is chose Florida. And again, it's very interesting in history. I have a good history of sports, but I'm more about the story, Andre. So kind of like bring back names or different things. But why did you sign with Florida, especially when you had other offers, I'm sure, because the University of Florida is such a great school. Possibly Miami of Florida, especially if it's in the same backyard. Why did you choose to be a Florida Gator?
All my life, my hometown that I grew up in, it's basically right in the middle of UF and FSU. And the kids that were pretty good from my high school, they ended up going to Florida State, Florida, and a few went to Miami. But most guys went to Florida State. I knew I was going to stay within the state of Florida. I knew that for a fact. Half my family liked Florida. My other half liked Florida State. And half my family liked the Cowboys. The other half liked the Redskins. So it was always that rivalry between those two programs. But I ended up choosing Florida because I felt it was the best fit for myself. And I always was I was more of a Florida fan growing up than anything. And honestly, I never even much had the vision of playing football on a major level like that because I never really seen anyone do it. And as I got older and I started making a few plays, it really didn't hit me until Spurrier walked into my living room. So that's when I really knew that I was good enough to go to a major university like that.
Then that's where you kind of given me the history of Florida Gator football, and it's Steve Spurrier in a lot of ways. I mean, there's been other times, but when you have somebody like Steve Spurrier in your living room telling you, you know, we're going to win SEC titles and try to win a national championship, are you crazy, especially being from you're from the state of Florida, to not say yes? I mean, it's a no-brainer, isn't it?
It was so plain. He put it so plain. I mean, all these colleges recruit me and everything. Like I said, I could have went to Florida State if I wanted to or UM. UM was under probation that year, so it would have been a little harder to get in UM, but I'm pretty sure I could have got in if I really wanted to go. But when Spurrier came to my house, he basically told me, he was like, you're going to have a great chance to get a great education. You're going to be on TV every Saturday. You're going to play in front of a pack house. You're going to compete for SEC championships, and you're also going to compete for national titles. You're like, what up? And you're going to have an opportunity to go to the NFL. And he was like, what else would you want? What else do you want? You're close to your family. We're only 45 minutes to an hour away. So it was right down the street. So it was like your family get to come see you play. He was like, what else do you really want? What else could you ask for? You know? So and
exactly.
The way he put it away, and it was a lot of my friends, we end up going to the same school, Alex Brown. We competed all our lives, and we were like maybe 10, 15 minutes away from each other, but we competed all our lives, but we end up choosing to go to UF together. So it was a great decision. I mean, I love my time there. I enjoyed my time there. I'm forever a Gator. And it feels so good that those guys are back at the top now. So hopefully we can find a way to continue to win and get into this playoff. And get in the playoff, anything can happen.
A lot of guys, it's interesting that your profession is the NFL. It's great. You're a Brown, you're a Browns backer. A lot of guys look at their college years as still. I have a lot of friends on Facebook that are NFL players, and they're posting their college stuff. Because, again, it's the best time of your life is college.
It absolutely is.
Explain to me when you were a Gator, going out in that field in front of that crowd, and how electric it was with Spurrier.
My first year, I redshirted, and we lost Georgia that year and LSU that year, which knocked us out of the SEC championship. But Florida State was ranked number one. And if they would have beat us that year, they would have ended up going to the national title. So our season was basically over. We wasn't playing for anything but pride. And that was the loudest I ever heard that stadium, other than maybe that Tennessee game when Alex had all those sacks. But to be a redshirt freshman, to sit on the sideline and just take the whole experience in and to knock off Florida State, our rivals, were their number one at the time, and to come back and win it in the fashion that we wanted, 32-29, when everybody thought the game was over, it was absolutely the most amazing experience I ever had as a football player, period. I think guys are more passionate about their college programs because when you're in college, you know you're going to be together for 3 to 5 years. So you know you're going to do that. You know you're going to be there 3 to 5 years. When you're in the, and so you know once you get out of practice, you're going to go to the dorm rooms with your teammates. You're going to the chow hall with your teammates. You're going to be around each other all the time. But when you're in the NFL, it's a job. So if you're going to work and you're going home, most guys got families. You're not 18 or 21 years old no more. You're actually at work with grown men. So they leave there and they go be with their family. So it's a job. So it's a lot more passion in college sports than it is in NFL.
When you were with Spurrier, was Florida starting to build? Did you guys? What was the closest you got ranked when you played with the Gators? What was your highest rank?
We was ranked number one every year at one point.
And then,
Man, we lost my last year. We lost to Tennessee. We were ranked number two. We were supposed to play out of Miami, and we ended up getting beat by the Tennessee my last year. That's 2000. That was when 9/11 happened. We ended up playing Tennessee at the end of the year. They ended up beating us. So that knocked us out. And the previous years, Florida State might beat us. It was always either us or Florida State. So that, like, they always was good back when we were playing. So the closest we ever got was pretty much my last year when we had Rex Grossman as quarterback. And we were loaded that year, and we should have won. We should have won it that year.
Yeah, definitely. And so you finished probably top five every year almost, or top 10.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely top 10. Definitely
so
top 10.
You're hoping that the program's back to that level, and you never got the opportunity – for the national championship, but you got to go to some major bowl games. What major bowl games did you play in?
We played in Orange Bowl twice. Orange Bowl twice, Sugar Bowl once, and Citrus Bowl once, I want to say.
Who was the best player you played with in Florida? Or would you say, like, it was the in that time period. That reminds that just brings people back. You know,
it's
most
yeah,
notable
it's so,
one.
It, I mean, it was so many guys. I think it'd be a disservice to
okay,
all
so
the guys.
How many of them ended up playing in the NFL that you played with?
The majority. Like honestly, like out of my freshman class, 21 of us got recruited. 11 of us went pro.
Oh.
So every year back then, when we were finishing the top 10, we were sending 8 to 10 guys to the league every year.
My gosh.
Every year.
And that's what you're hoping after Spurrier, and also after Spurrier was, Urban Meyer. You've not been able to respond to Meyer. Meyer was like, but after that, after he left, it's been a little tough for Florida. And who's Florida's coach right now? This is a good point. I just had to know that.
Jim McElwain. He was at CSU. So he's doing a great job there, man. He's instilling that discipline again, and he brought that. Our defense always been really good, but you have to have a high power offense to be able to compete in the SEC as well.
All right, so you go from the greatest, one of the best college football teams to the Cleveland Browns. let's talk about draft day. Okay, because again, we looked at your career lasted a long period of time. Just to tell you some of your career highlights as I look at Wikipedia, which I never trust. Trust me, a lot of stuff's missing.
Yeah.
I talk to people all the time and try to prepare for it, but it's the best way to kind of pick what I'd like to talk about in 30 minutes, because you can talk about tons of stuff. The SEC championship in 2000, your first team All-SEC 2001, second team All-American 2001. So you had to, and again, it doesn't say what you were picked for with the Browns unless I go into that.
Fifth round draft pick, 141st pick.
So what do you think the reason, like, especially
when
being all close to all American, did you go in the fifth and not earlier? What do you think the reason?
My junior year, I tore my knee, so I missed my whole junior year. So teams were skeptical of my knee. Even though I had a great season my senior year, they still thought that, having a major knee surgery and missing the whole year, it was kind of like your used, damaged goods. And a lot of teams were afraid that something could happen again. So a lot of teams shied away because of my knee injury. Because my senior year, I went to the Senior Bowl, and I competed against all the guys that – got drafted ahead of me. I got defensive MVP of the Senior Bowl. So I felt that I proved that I was, if not the best, one of the best linebackers coming out that year. But like I said, at the end of the day, God don't make no mistakes. I was upset. Literally, I was very, very upset when I got drafted, when I went that late, fifth round.
Right.
But looking back over my career, that was probably the best thing to happen to me, to go so late, because when you go late like that, fifth round,
exactly,
there's not really a lot of pressure on you. They give you time to mature. They give you time to understand the NFL game. And my rookie year, I didn't play at all. I had a few plays here and there, but pretty much I was special team. So I had a chance to learn from some great veteran players. And my second year, I started from my second year to my last year. But like I said, if I would have went first round, they probably would have threw me in that fire. And honestly, I wasn't prepared for that. So the best thing that could have happened to me was, looking back over my career now, a 36-year-old Andre Davis talking to you compared to a 22-year-old Andre Davis. 22-year-old me felt I can do anything, but I knew that I had limitations. I wasn't ready for – I probably was ready for the game physically, but not so much mentally. And I wasn't ready for the things that come with the game of NFL off the field. I wasn't ready for the fame. I wasn't ready for the money. I wasn't ready for the commitment. I wasn't ready for any of those things. So having a year to sit back and watch and analyze everybody, it prepared me a lot.
And that's where you said the readiness, and by getting as a top pick, you become a bust. Like, I forget which Brown I talked to. There was a bust that was, I think, a linebacker, and he was such a great guy, and I think he's doing – I forget what he's doing in his career. I think he went to the CFL after that, but he was a top pick. and it just it didn't work out for him with the Browns. So let's kind of
I know people label guys bust and everything, but honestly, like the timing, the opportunity, everything just have to be perfect.
I agree.
Because I mean, injuries, guys have so much off the field drama that people don't really realize. It's crazy when you give a kid that's 21 to 23 years old and they come into money and they never had anything. People come out of the woodworks, so it's so hard for. And if you don't have a strong foundation, like me, I had my wife. Me and my wife, we've been together for 20 years now. So when
that's
I got
great.
To Cleveland, she was there with me. So if I started killing myself, she would
problem.
Be. Yeah. She would be quick to tell me, listen, I know where you come from. You need to calm it down. So she would be quick to tell me that. So I was blessed to have her. But it's a lot of pressure on guys. Some guys are able to handle the pressure. Some guys not. But also, I said, opportunity and timing. So it's just hard for me to label guys bust when I know how hard it is.
It's the wrong situation, wrong time. I agree, but that's what they said. And I forgot his name, and they'll come to me in a second. I interviewed so many people, Andre. It's just it's a blur sometimes. But looking at your career with the Browns, and I'm so glad you brought up your wife because this is the situation. The problem with guys in the NFL is if they aren't team players, if they're not showing up to meetings all the time, unless you're one of the biggest stars, you're not lasting in the NFL, are you? You don't know how to work.
At all.
You're not. You're done because there's still how many people want your spot that show up at training camp every year to take your spot? A ton.
What people don't realize, it's not just training camp. Every Tuesday, Tuesday's our off day. Every Tuesday, teams bring in 5 to 10 players just to work out. Every Tuesday.
Oh, my gosh.
So you're basically on a week-to-week contract, honestly.
It's different than the guaranteed money in other sports, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Up until year four, when you become vested, the fourth game of the fourth year, when you become vested, you're considered a vested player. If they cut you after the first kickoff, you get paid the rest of that year. Prior to that, you're basically on a week-to-week contract.
Oh, my.
They can cut you anytime, and you don't get that money. So guys come in and work out for teams on Tuesdays on your day off, and if you don't – I remember one time it was a situation where we had a guy in Cleveland. He had two straight weeks with a game ball. That third week, he didn't play as well, and they released him.
It's crazy. Down the line too. Caps, and they find somebody to replace you for half the money, they're doing it, right? It's business.
Exactly. And honestly, that's how I got my opportunity. Like the veteran players that I told you about earlier, they were making a lot of money. And they were older. They were in their 9th, 10th year. Then they drafted my year, they drafted three linebackers. Now they got three young players going into year two who are making three-fourths less than what these veteran players are making.
Yeah.
Let's play these guys. We're going to surround them with a good defensive line, good secondary. So we're going to allow these guys opportunities to mess up because we're invested in them, but we're not really invested in them. We don't have a lot of money invested in these guys. So it's trial and error. If these guys do well, then they can get a contract later on. If they don't do well, then we're going to bring somebody else in to take their place. The NFL
business
is a business.
It's business, right. It's business. Yeah.
It's business.
That's why
I don't have any hard feelings. It's business.
Well, exactly. And that's why you got to basically have the right agent. You have the right team. You have to save your money. Because you never know. You can get a big contract, but then blow it all. And I have stories about that, too. And I think what, Andre, you're able to do is tell, and I already can tell we can get into the Ed Block, Courage Award and Denver Broncos, that's two things, to finish up the interview because I'm always about time and understand where we're at. But, I mean, I'm so glad you brought this up. So one question about your wife, how did she keep you grounded? Because a lot of people talked about that. When they have a wife that's able to keep them grounded and keep them, meaning grounded, in a way that's a good way, not like a babysitter way, but a way like, hey, well, we're here as a team. We're going to do this together. You're not going in here and amount of girls and money and all the different the drama that happens every day in the NFL if you don't have the right person to surround yourself with. Why was your wife so important to you that way? Yeah.
She, me and my wife been together for 20 years, but we went to elementary school together. So we was insane, like in kindergarten together. From kindergarten to ninth grade, we really didn't have a good relationship. And that's a story for another time. But we started, becoming friends in 10th grade. And 10th grade, summer going to 11th grade, we started dating. So my junior year, we started dating. And it was never about football with her. She didn't really like me to play football. When I tore my knee in college, she wanted me to stop playing because she was just like, well, we can just – she was working three jobs at the time, and she was like, well, you will just get your degree, and we'll just get it – both of us get a job, and we just live a normal life. But it was something I wanted to do. So she always supported me and everything, and I always had so much respect for her as well. Like I said, when my junior year, my oldest daughter was born, and my wife – sitting here, I got a torn knee, we got a baby on the way, and she's working three jobs. So I seen what she went through to support me, to be there for me. And once I made it to the league, we always had that mutual respect. We always was able to talk to each other, not only on a husband and wife level, but also on a friend level as well. So I knew that she always had my best interest. She was never coming at me sideways or trying to tell me what to do, trying to be my mother or anything. She was always looking out for my best interest. And I made some mistakes. I thought a couple of times where she was telling me about watching certain people. I'd be like, no, they cool, them good people. But it ended up biting me. Yeah, she ended up being right. And she never told me or she never brought that up in my face. Like, I told you so. She never... Even the situation where we lost money, she never said, I told you so, I told you so, I told you so. She was always more, we'll work through this. We'll get through this together. So I always had that love and respect for her. And like I said, by me knowing that she has my back, she has my best interest, it was so much easier to listen to what she had to say. And I never wanted to put her in a situation where I embarrassed her or I make a terrible decision that's going to cause me to lose my family. No decision is worth losing what we built over these years. So it was easier for me to listen to her then and now as well.
Exactly. So, Andre, the two things you want to cover, Denver Broncos, Ed Block Courage Award. First of all, going and signing free agency with the Denver Broncos. Now you're back to a type of Florida atmosphere in a way by going and playing for Denver, right? Especially if the season started out. I just did some research just now, searching on Wikipedia.
Right.
But you guys started out 6-0 the year that you came there, and it looked like it was going to be a year, and then the bottom fell out. So, but it was an amazing experience to be in Denver, wasn't it?
It really was. And to piggyback really quick about my Cleveland days, I remember when I was at Florida and we were beating Vanderbilt 82. We beat them 82-13 my senior year, right? So I remember vividly sitting on the sidelines in my head thinking, man, I wonder how those guys feel knowing that they're going into a game where they know they're not going to win. Like, how do they feel? And, God, He gave me my answer because when I was in Cleveland, we went into the game. We went into the game not knowing that we were going to lose, but always some way finding a way to be on the end of the losing streak. So it was rough, man. But then I come to Denver. We started off 6-0. It was just like you said, it was like being back in college again. And it was that great brief feeling for a moment. And it was kind of like it was surreal because that was starting off 6-0 here in Denver was the first time I started off 6-0 since I had left college. But then, like you said, man, it was too good to be true.
Start off 6-0,
lose 4. Yeah. Start off 6-0, lose 4 in a row, win 2 more, and then lose the last 4. So it was like,
yeah,
man, it's
were,
crazy.
Yeah, the playoffs almost given to you. And it
yeah,
went
it was there.
Bam.
It was like, no one could have told us we was not going to make the playoffs that year.
Oh.
Start up 6-0. We don't need to win four more
shocked.
Games.
I was
yeah.
shocked. Because Broncos and Steelers are my favorite teams. I remember every year. I just had to look at the year. And I said, oh, Andre, if you played for some of these teams, like, wrong place, wrong time. But it goes back to, again, Josh McDaniels was the coach. He was young, yet understandingly that, you know, it just ended up happening that ball bounces the wrong way. Injuries happen, wrong quarterback, different things before they brought Peyton Manning in. And I'm concerned, and this is a question for you. I don't know if you root for the Broncos because you play whatever teams you played for, especially the Broncos and Browns, and you played for the Bills to finish up. But the Broncos, things are going down after such a great start. What's going to happen with what happened to Manning? That just shocked
you know,
me. I mean, when I saw that score, I didn't get to watch the game. I said, why can't the city beat him in Denver that bad? I don't know what they're going to do.
You know, it was, first of all, I don't really have an NFL team right now. I really don't. I live here in Denver, but I root for certain guys. I root for the guys that I know. It's so much, like I said, I got so many players around the league that I either play with or that I know really well. So I don't root for teams. I want the Broncos to do well. I mean, obviously, if they do well, then the city is a lot livelier. But I root for players. Now, as far as their situation and their team is going, they are fortunate to be 7-2 because they could easily be 2-7.
Yeah,
they played some really close games, and the defense bailed them out. For as Peyton goes, I mean, he's a great player, man. He's had a great career. But if you play this game long enough, your skills will start diminishing. You're going to get older. Your body's going to hurt a lot more. You're not going to be able to bounce back. You don't have the strength that you once had. So if you play this game long enough, you will start to look like your age. And unfortunately, he's the quarterback. A lot of times when guys play other positions, you can hide that. You can hide the fact that you're getting older because the pressure, the spotlight is not really on you. But when you're the quarterback and you're throwing four picks, obviously, and you're a quarterback of his caliber, everybody wants him to continue to be Superman when he's not. He's just not. He just can't do it anymore. He's not.
Yeah. You think it's injuries? Because at times he looks like he's good, and then it killed him. And then, like, to see what happened yesterday, I'm concerned if it's the end of the year like last year. So what do you do as Pat Bowlen and Gary Kubiak and John Elway when he's such a legend, yet what's going to be the best for the team to remain the remainder of the season? They're going to win the division because the division's terrible, but still.
One thing I know about the NFL, and like I said, like we spoke on earlier, it's truly a business. They're going to do what's best for the Broncos. Peyton's a legend, and they respect Peyton. They got love for Peyton. But it's not about what you've done in the past. It's all about what can you do for my team now. Because they have to be loyal to those other 52 guys as well. They have to be loyal to those fans as well. If Peyton's giving them the best chance to win, so be it. He will be out there. But if he's not giving them the best chance to go out there and win, it would happen just like it did yesterday. And I was super surprised. Never in my life would I thought Peyton Manning would be cut, one, or Peyton Manning be benched. And if that happened to Peyton, that happened to anybody. Just like it happened to Joe Montana, Emmitt Smith, those guys, I mean –
but I'm hoping
it's just injury.
You're making me nervous, Andre. I'm hoping it's just 1 week because I've seen him get some pretty good numbers 2 weeks. It has to be injury. What I would do is rest him, try to go ahead and win a couple games. You're gonna finish third seed or second seed, and then just roll from there. That's the only way to do it.
I don't really know if the injuries play a part, but I really don't know if it's all about injuries, because he had 4 interceptions yesterday, but he came into the game with 13 interceptions, still leading the league. So,
True.
So six interceptions in the last 2 weeks against Colts and the Chiefs, but it was 11 before that. So he has not been playing like Peyton Manning, that we're used to, accustomed to seeing this whole year. So I look at it as Father Time is really catching up. As a defensive player, if we're going in and we're playing against the Broncos, we know that, okay, this is the line. As a defensive back, you guys, he can't throw the ball past this point anymore. So this is the target line. So we're going to rush the passer, we're going to blitz up the middle, get in his face, and we know they like to run those deep hooks, those deep digs, because the outside passes are the toughest ones to throw. You got to have good arm strength. You got to put the ball.
Exactly.
These guys are professional players. Like, if you have slip up any kind of way, they're breaking on those balls. So the injuries play a part of it, true, like it did yesterday. But overall, looking at the big picture, me as a defensive player, I just think he's just getting old.
He's diminishing. However, what I think, and again, we've got a Florida guy talking about Tennessee. I'm just kidding with you on that one. he's getting of a Tennessee player taking on Florida, and I don't think I forget the age. Did you ever play against Peyton when he was?
The year that I was redshirted, that was his last year. But Peyton never beat Florida. Just throw that out there.
So anytime someone that wears Tennessee, especially when you bled Gators that year, even redshirted, you were rooting for your team. And seeing Peyton out there and watching the whole hype of Peyton Manning, understand. Well, I think, and the last thing on Peyton, and this is so great, we are still recording, don't worry about that, for syndication. No, I really think that Peyton Manning has diminished skills, yet they lack a running back as strong as they had when they went to the Super Bowl.
That's true. That's true. I mean, the offense, I mean, it's just not him. It's definitely just not him. The offense that they're running.
Exactly.
I mean, just like back in the day when they were running the offense with John Elway, Dick Plummer, those guys, man, like that boot was big. Those guys can, especially Jake Plummer, man. Jake will fake that ball and he'll boot that thing out and he would run it or he can throw that thing real far. But Peyton can't do that. He's not equipped to do that anymore.
Exactly.
Like I said, I'm not hating or knocking Peyton. I mean, he's a great player. He's one of the best players statistically, regular season statistically-wise, he's one of the best to ever do it. But we're not talking about his career. We're talking about 2015.
Exactly. And I'm not going to say I did not like him when he was an Indianapolis Colt, when he was killing my Broncos. So, again, I'm a Bronco fan, a Steeler fan. I want the AFC title to be that game.
Hey, what are you gonna do in a few weeks when Denver play go up travel to Pittsburgh?
I don't think Denver needs to win. So Pittsburgh, I should go to the game. I should try to pick up tickets. I didn't even know that they're playing each other. I should have. I have to look into that for sure.
Say it's a month. They play in a month, if I'm not mistaken.
Really? Wow. That'll be a big game. But I think Pittsburgh will easily win because I think Pittsburgh's going to run the table. I really believe that if Roethlisberger doesn't get hurt. All right, let's go to X-Lock Courage War real quick. Okay, so
Sir.
I've interviewed such tremendous people with character that have won the X-Lock Courage Award. I've interviewed lost track of like 3, 4, or 5 people, but they've been just such genuine people as you have been today. Tell us about why you won the X-Lock Courage Award.
Ed Block Courage Award is an award voted on by your teammates. And, it was a great honor. And I was pushing for my other teammate to get the honor because I felt he was just as deserving as I was. I always have been the type of person, Mr. Neal, to treat people like I wanted to be treated. Regardless of my status when I was in the league, when I became a household name in Cleveland, or whatever, or even make it to the NFL, I never feel to this day feel that I'm no better than nobody. I feel nobody's no better than me, but I don't put myself above anyone. Like if I go somewhere and it's a line, I want to wait in the back of the line till it's my turn. So I think just me being the type of person that I am, and guys knew that and know still to this day that they can count on me, I feel right. that was a big part of the decision for them voting me Ed Block Courage. And it's a great honor. I mean, I went down there and I met some great guys, and I had a great time down there. Me and my wife, we went down there to Baltimore for 3 to 4 days, and the whole experience was wonderful, and I'm forever grateful to my teammates to give me that experience. So it was great.
Also, I saw when you played with the Browns, did you get a chance to play with Darnell Dinkins? Darnell and I are connected out in Pittsburgh. He's a neighbor right down the road.
Yeah.
I do some work with him. He's a great guy, Darnell.
Yeah, man. How's Darnell doing, man?
I'll tell him that. I'll text him after I said I interviewed you. I just wanted to bring that up because I saw Browns days. He's doing great.
Great.
He's got his training. He's doing some tremendous work in the city of Pittsburgh with the inner city kids, and he's running great training programs for athletes. So speaking of you, life after football, what are you doing right now, Andre?
Right now, I am doing a lot of motivational speaking. I'm also doing mentoring with these kids. I have my own business. I have a for-profit side, and also have a non-profit side, NPO side, and it's called All Roads Open. You can go to my website, allroadsopen.org. And what All Roads Open is basically allowing people to know that they can do anything or achieve anything in this life that they really want to. I come from a small town of 6,500 people, and my goal in life when I was a kid was to drive trucks. I mean, not drive trucks, but ride on the back of a garbage truck and pick up trash. I wanted to be a sanitation worker because I never knew any of this, anything that I've experienced in life. I never knew that was feasible. But once I became decent, I realized, okay, well, now I have a chance to go to college for free because my parents couldn't pay for me to go to college. Mm. So looking back over my life, me and my wife, we created the All Roads Open. And basically, coming from a small town, this one little single road, which connects to a major intersection, we just use the roads as an analogy that these roads, you might start this one place, but this road could take you anywhere that you really want to go.
That's fantastic. And definitely the website, one more time, Andre, and there's any other place to find information on you? It's the website.
Yeah, like I said, allroadsopen.org. My Facebook is just Andre Davis. Twitter, Instagram is Andre Davis 54. And basically, that's what I am. And we have three daughters, and 15, 12, and 8-year-old. So all three are involved in sports. All are doing very well academically. And besides running them around and going and spending time at different schools, talking to kids, motivating kids, our day is filled up with them.
You and Darnell are doing similar things. I'm going to tell Darnell that. That's interesting.
Tell Darnell
we're able to connect.
And, I would love to connect with him again, man. We kind of lost contact when I left Cleveland and throughout the years, so I would love to catch up with him.
And if you could text, I think he Joseph gave me your cell, so
yes.
I will text Darnell, group text with you too. Okay?
Sounds great.
All right, thanks for having me on, man.
Anytime, man. Anytime.
I definitely will reach back out to you, especially if my Broncos, if Peyton ends up making a big comeback.
Hopefully he does.
Peyton, now Peyton's going to come back and roll the Broncos all the way. We'll see. We could talk to you then.
Hopefully he does. Hopefully.
All right, Andre, take care. All right, bye-bye. All right, that was Total Celebrity Show. We'll be live tomorrow. Take care, everyone. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, Tolter.net, for more information. Twitter, Tolter, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Tolter, Pinterest, Neil Haley, Google Plus, and also on Periscope at Total Tutor. And I want to thank Coach Karen Hall for my guest today. I think she'll be chiming into the show, so we'll see. And I know she'll have stories about our guests, so I'm excited to welcome the program. I consider him one of Pittsburgh's basketball legends, former NBA player Myron Brown. Myron, thanks for calling, and how are you?
I'm pretty good. How you doing, Neil?
I'm doing great. I'm doing fantastic. It's a fun week and fun discussions and stories. Now, growing up, Myron, did you ever think you would play in the NBA or in Europe? Was that something that you thought would happen to you?
Well, as a kid, you know, it was a goal of mine at a very early age to be an NBA player. When you're young, you can't really think that it's a realistic goal, but you just never know. So for me, it was every day basketball. I want to be a basketball player. And I thought it was a way for me to get out of my neighborhood. I grew up in a rough neighborhood, and I could use basketball to help get an education, some free education to help my parents in that way. And then, you know, beyond that, you know, it really is just a dream. And, you know, to accomplish that dream is incredible. So, you know, I was fortunate to have some good things happen along the way. And, you know, it's hard work. It's not an easy thing to do. So,
yeah, it definitely is not the easiest thing to do. And there's a process throughout. One of the things that you're known for is your jumping ability. When did you know that, hey, I really can play above the rim? How old were you when you first dunked?
Well, I'll tell you what led to being able to jump. You know, in my neighborhood growing up, there was a hoop. It was 11 foot high, no lie. And
really?
There was only a few guys that could dunk on that hoop. So that was one of the goals. Of, you could dunk on that hoop. Dunking on a 10 foot hoop was easy. So it was one of those, you know, every day I'd go out, I'm dunking on this rim, I'm dunking on this rim. And you try everything, toe raises, squat,
right,
anything you could in order to try to jump a little bit higher. So, you know, and I was probably one of three or four guys that I can recall that could dunk on that hoop. And some of it's natural, some of it's a little bit of weightlifting. If you know my frame, I'm not very big guy. I'm 190 pounds when I was playing. So, but that was one of the goals. If I could dunk on that hoop, I'd be able to jump over a lot of people.
So how long did it take you to dunk on the 11-foot hoop?
I was dunking on 11-foot hoop in 11th grade. 10-foot hoop I was dunking probably into my 9th grade, early part of my 10th grade year. A lot of bicycle riding contributed to my jumping. You know, but again, if you wanted to be above the rim, you had to try crazy things, and sometimes it might not even have anything to do with what you've done. Sometimes it's just God-given ability, you know, just the natural things that come within you. So I don't know. I think it's a combination of both for myself.
It's amazing. Yeah, so that's it. You're right, Myron. It's something. It's a combination of the both, for sure. Now the playgrounds. I was talking to that is definitely where you learned how to play the game in a lot of ways. Meaning, you played against it. As I was talking to Darrell Porter a couple weeks ago, and other guys have told me this, and I lived this through as a former basketball player myself. The only way you got better is playing against older guys, more experienced guys when you're younger, and playing against the best competition. So tell us about how you became a playground legend in a lot of ways.
That's
especially with
the missing piece with today's basketball. You know, we have AAU. I tell people all the time, when we were coming up, AAU meant we're going to get five guys. It was hey, and you. We're going here and we're going to play there. So your reputation was established by playing at the local parks, be it Mellon Park, South Park, North Park, Pauline Park over up in off of 19, off of West Liberty Road. So you established a reputation by going around and playing against other guys from other neighborhoods. Our parents didn't take us anywhere. We couldn't afford to be taken around town and staying overnight. We set it up, call guys, and we'll get our five. We'll bring them down. Mount Lebanon in the mornings on Saturday.
Right.
You name it, all the best players played at the park. Nowadays, they if it's not organized, they're not doing it. You show me a park, I'll show you an empty park. So kids aren't getting better by playing. And I never played against kids my age. It was always against grown men. And you learn the rough and tumble of there's no blood, there's no foul.
Exactly.
You know? And I grew up not calling fouls. And to this day, when I play with my friends or wherever, I don't call fouls. If you foul me, I think you respect my game enough that you give me the foul. So The kids nowadays, they look at the screen as soon as they think they got touched, and the ball is going the other way. So it's one of those things that I'd like to see changed in the game. You know, you play until you hear a whistle. That was the old thing.
Yeah.
You play until you hear a whistle. So it's a different age now.
And then they complain about different calls and not playing rough. And that's interesting to talk about. The playgrounds are empty. It's because everyone has to be on the AAU team now. Everything has to be organized, which causes, in a lot of ways, Myron, yet freedom. Yet you played when you played, but then you knew, hey,
yep,
I got to do my schoolwork. I got to do this. Now that you're traveling all the time, you're losing that community sense of basketball and playing best in the area, for sure.
And it not only affects just the individual playing, it affects the entire family. You go on an AAU trip, everyone in the household has to go, and it gets expensive.
Yeah.
So I'm not a big advocate of AAU, but I understand that it's the tool that they use now to evaluate players. For me, as an example, I'd much rather, if you got to go from Pittsburgh to Ohio for an AAU tournament, I'd rather you put 2 hours in of working out individual skill and then go and playing somewhere locally and then come back later in the evening and put in another couple hours. You don't spend a ton of money and you'll get better working on your individual skills that you can apply in game setting. But I also understand the exposure aspect of AAU. So you have to respect it for what it is. But, man, I think you can save a ton of money and still get better and be able to be evaluated and recognized with your ability by not even participating in AAU.
Yeah, and I agree, but I think AAU is because now that's where it's going, but it's the problem is it's a big business. It's become a big business. But let's jump to you, Myron. You're a playground legend, and you played high school basketball, I think it was Stow Rocks, correct? Is that what you played, Myron?
Yeah.
That's Stow
exactly
Rocks, Ken.
Right.
Stow Rocks beat me, WCL Finals, 1991. That team was a pretty darn good Stow Rocks team as well, if you remember, if you're fans of those days, Myron. You finished up your career at Stow Rocks, what year was it?
87.
Graduated from 87. So Stow Rocks had a great tradition for high school basketball. What do you think was the reason? Just great players from where you grew up, or is it coaching, or is it tradition? What did you think? I know you were one of the best.
It was a combination of all those things. Growing up, sport was a way to keep you out of trouble, kept you off the street. And I played pretty much everything. I was a basketball player, baseball, a little bit of football, but I quit when I realized getting hit hurts. Ran a little track, but for me, I saw early on that I had some ability at basketball, and if I worked at it, it would actually pay off for me. And you talk about the tradition. I saw from an early age, 81 team, they never lost a home game in the new gym. The 83 team, they went undefeated. So we had a basketball tradition. And there was guys that I looked up to that I said, if I could be as good as him, or I'll get some free money for school. And then anything beyond that is gravy. So we had the tradition there. The system had good coaches, Dick Citrone, Kenny Lex, Jack Shaw. So there was a tradition of performance, coaching, and individual players that wanted to get better. Every guy that I played with coming up through high school wanted to get out of our environment, wanted to get to college, to help their parents save money. Those things play a part in aspiring for more. So with me, I saw an opportunity, and I was grabbing it by the horns. I didn't care what was happening. I wasn't afraid of anything. And part of that is because of the environment I grew up with. When I got to Slippery Rock, I didn't know you were supposed to be afraid of a senior. I had no clue. So I went in with the mentality of, like, I'm a senior. I'm afraid of nothing. Meanwhile, I should have been afraid of everything. So, and part of that is because of McKee's Rock. So the tradition of that. But I say that just go ahead.
Now, Myron, so tell me specifically the decision to play at Slippery Rock. Now, you were recruited by others bigger schools? Would you think it was your size? What was the reasoning for it? And then you ended up at the NBA, so it's a great story for sure in Europe. How, I mean, you didn't go to a bigger college. Are the bigger colleges after you recruiting?
What happened was, when I was at Stowe Rocks, I pretty much was playing like the power forward position because, you know, you don't have a lot of big kids at the AA schools. So I was somewhat out of position, somewhat a between player, tweener, they called it at the time, and somehow got overlooked. I was, I think, Fab 20 or whatever it was called. I was top 10 in scoring my senior year. There's just a bunch of shortcomings that happened that, you know, were out of my control. So when that happens, you got to take the best of what you have. So I had a couple letters from Division I. I had a Penn State letter when I was in a junior. The Air Force Academy, the Citadel, a couple just letters. From a recruiting standpoint, all of the local Division II schools. But it was mostly Slippery Rock in California that it came down to. I received a letter from Coach Barlett at Slippery Rock every day. Jim Boone down at Cal probably called me every day and may have showed up at my house on a daily basis. So it came down to those two schools, and there was three things that made my decision. One, when I went on a recruiting trip, the point guard that ended up being my roommate for 4 years, C. Russell, came in from Virginia on the same recruiting trip. So we kind of made a pact. If you come, I come. Before I made my decision, I was at a track meet, and I told Jim Boone, just give me some space. I'll make a decision. And sure enough, he comes to one of my track meets, and then when I get back home from the track meet, he's at my house. So that made my decision a little easier. I said, listen, I asked you for some space. You didn't give me any space. I'm not coming to Cal. So that eliminated Cal. And then the final thing was we were going to Hawaii on our freshman year tournament. So I figured I'd never get to Hawaii in my lifetime. So I got a point guard coming in, Boone's on my behind, and we're going to Florida. Or Hawaii for a freshman trip.
Wow.
You know, it made for good reason to go to Slippery Rock.
So you go to Slippery Rock. You have a tremendous career right at Slippery Rock. I posted something on our the show. I found it on Slippery Rock honoring you or something, like a great mural picture that I put on for one of the images for the radio interview that we did today. So you'll have to see that, and I'm going to make sure I share that on Facebook. It's tremendous. Your career, you had an unbelievable career, Slippery Rock, kind of highlight for it. But before that, I'm so excited. And I told you, I Coach Karen Hall set everything up. Now I have her finally back online. Let her nail a couple questions. WPL Hall of Famer Coach Karen Hall joins us for the finish up of this interview with Myron Brown. Coach Karen, we were talking about Myron's career at Slippery Rock, and I was asking him to kind of highlight how unbelievable a career he had at Slippery Rock. Karen could tell us more and then ask the next question. So, Coach Karen,
hey,
thank you.
Before
hi,
Karen
Myron.
Gets to going, hi, Karen, how you doing?
There good, thank you.
With Armin Gilliam, every time Karen would enter the building, our friend Armin would say, Karen Hall, the one who does it all.
I love it. Thank you, Myron. I love it. Now I'm ready to go.
Now and I'm listening and enjoying this. Go ahead, Karen.
So I'm hoping that during this conversation, the word high-flying Myron Brown came up because
he probably
he is
dunked
really
on me
known.
At one point. On a playground,
yeah, collegially, and hopefully he's mentioned he had a debut on that NBA Inside Stuff for one of his major high-flying collegiate dunks. So hopefully he mentioned that, because if he didn't, he's going to tell our listeners about that. And I also know he's going to talk about the Myron Brown Day of the Slippery Rock that was given to him from within that athletic department from his stellar collegiate career. So, Myron, take it away. Don't hold on to that. Share all that with us.
Well, let's start with the Flying Myron stuff.
Yeah.
I guess that was in 91. It was my first basket as an NBA player. It was a two-on-one fast break with Gerald Glass, and Dana Burrows was getting back on the defense, and Gerald drops it down to me, and lo and behold, I'm in the situation that I like the most on a basketball court, throwing in for a dunk. And it made one of the finalists for Dunk of the Week with Ahmad Rashad on Inside NBA. So that was a nice little highlight.
So did you name that dunk? Did you name that dunk? Gerald Dawkins, our former late Philadelphia 76ers, he had all his dunks named. So did you name that particular dunk?
No, I never got into naming them, but I tried to memorize the ones that made me smile the most. There's a few of those. So. but as far as at Slippery Rock with that night up there, I don't know, it's probably been 4 years now, where they kind of, they didn't retire my jersey, but they retired the jersey, not the number. And that was, you know, a nice moment for me. It just really said that I was recognized for my accomplishments on the basketball court. Neil had talked about, you know, career, when you look back and you say, wow, this was a really impressive career. It's so humbling when you think about the impact that it has on the program, the records that will be there for a long time and quite possibly forever, because not many people are going to average 18 a game as a freshman. 22 for a career. I mean, you can write off a bunch of numbers that stand out. You know, you get 2,600 points in a career. There's not a lot of players that are doing that. But the best feeling amongst all of that, when people think you just scored, you know, I averaged 6-7 rebounds a game as a senior. I had over 700 rebounds in my career, 300 assists. And more importantly, our teams won. We were picked to finish dead last my freshman year. We ended up third in the conference. My second year, we finished tied for second. My third year, we were the first team to go undefeated in the conference, finished ranked number two in the nation, preseason number one my senior year. So along with doing some things individually, we actually improved every single year collectively as a team. So I'm most proud of that than I am anything individually.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. And it needs to be noted that you were a four-year starter, a four-year All-American at Slippery Rock. You helped take the team to the NCAA Division II regional tournament. So quite a stellar career you had, along with some of your teammates there. And it's awesome when your college can recognize your efforts, as you just mentioned. And, you know, we don't want to sidestep your work and giving back in the community. So can you tell us a little bit about what you've been doing in the community to share some of all that knowledge and wisdom with some youth today?
There's a couple things I do. I work with Tim McConnell down at his basketball camp every year. He's got a shooting camp that I work with. He's got a girls camp that he runs, and then he has some regular just basketball skills camps that I help with. Also, I've done some things with Bill Neal, with Champions, who he does some things in terms of giving back to the community for the underprivileged kids in the inner city. I also do some individual instructions with some various kids that a couple have gone on to college, some smaller schools, and have played. So I give back in that way. Currently, I'm just working every day, taking care of my family in the construction field, doing some remodeling and things like that. So, but I try to give back every opportunity I can with basketball, even if it's just simple tips to a kid, you know, that I've seen play in a game, something that can help them, that can change his entire career around. Sometimes one little thing will get a kid going in the right direction and can help them immensely. So those are the things that I do to try to give back.
Great. That's fantastic. That's awesome.
Coach Hall, with some good, powerful questions.
for Myron Brown. I think I was going in a direction, but I forgot about that. I just wanted him to tell me his highlights, but it's enough said, All-American 4 years. Now, Myron, I guess getting to the NBA.
Let's take that back. Not 4 years. I was All-American 2 years.